get real with you. When real guys talk real sports, we will. Ray, Marcus, game changer. Start to get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Certain guys, you just got to recognize, I got to pay the money, I got to keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We're not going to make it. Sometimes you got to create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron with this.
I do have a bit of a problem with execution. Right?
He burned a lot of bridges. He's going to be hated in Chicago. He's going to be hated in Cleveland. He's going to be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's going to be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play them. Lord, 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 we got a nail biter going on in Boston, baby. I'm watching this game, man. Celtics just went up one on a KG dunk. Oh, man, the playoffs, baby. I love it. I love it. Welcome to Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio, where real guys talk real sports. You are now in tune with the resistance. It's your boy, Marcus the Game Changer, holding you down tonight, as always. On the line, I got my man, D. Wills. Holla at the people.
I'm loving it, man. This is the best time of year. I hope you're checking out these games. I'm trying to catch the end of this one. This is a hell of a game. You know, the Knicks are playing better than you thought. They're playing some defense. There's been some crazy games over the weekend. This is you can't beat it, man. You can't beat it.
Yeah, Carmelo earns a little bit of respect for me tonight, man. I'm a big critic of Carmelo's, and yeah, he earned some points. He earned some Boy Scout points tonight. His dog meter went up a notch or two the way he played. I mean, he might be close to 20 rebounds, 40-some points. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Knicks fans ain't seen nothing like that since Bernard King. Not in the Garden. What is it, the TDS Garden now, whatever they call it?
The TDS Garden, I know what they're branded at. They're trying to get some extra money because all that money they lost when Isaiah was killing them. So they figured they done branded, gave away the name and everything else. So the garden in Boston is the TDS Garden, not
okay.
The front garden.
Okay. So
they had to rename that one after Bird left. So they needed that money.
Yeah, they did. They did. It's a hard knock life out there, man. The economy is bad and got worse. But we got a live show for the listeners out there tonight. Again, you are in tune with the Resistance, Renegade Radio, RSG, the Real Sports Guys. Feel free to call in tonight. We got a banging show for you. We're going to cover a lot of ground, as we always do. We always go deep. You know what I mean? We like Mars. We only run nine routes. We only want to run part of the route tree, and that's the deep part. We go deep into our topics. That's what we do. This is like editorial radio. You know, you're not going to get this anywhere else. But here, you know, we bring a lot of flavor, show you the interconnections and the intersections between sports and other realms of culture, and that's what we do. But if you want to get on, call in 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to join in. We're going to get the chat feature going. If anybody wants to call, you don't want to call in, but you want to chat with us, Game Changer is going to be holding you down there. All right? I got that. So get on the chat. And we can go back and forth a little bit. You know, we can spar. You know, don't bring no weak bars, though. Don't come with no weak bars. You know, bring a hot 16 if you're gonna get on the chat. Don't come weak. You're going to get pulled out the cipher. And you don't want that to happen because you might get your car revoked. We don't like to do that. You know, we like to keep our listeners happy. We like to keep you in the mix. If you come weak, we may have to bar you from the cipher for a week or two. Man, this game is getting crazy, man. I'm sorry. I'm trying to do a show and watch a game at the same time, man. Jared Jeffries, I thought he was dead.
That's what I'm saying. When they had Jeffries up there, I was like, oh. They brought him out of the witness protection program.
Seriously, I ain't seen that boy since Indiana. Since that Final Four they made.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm like,
oh, man, when you see Jared Jeffries showing up, man, making plays at the end of the game, you know it's the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm like, where's Bailey at? Where's Bailey?
That may be the first. Damon Bailey, oh, hell no. Oh, man. Damon Bailey probably running for office in Indiana right now. He can rule the world. I remember when he came out, man. I thought the way he was talking about him, I thought he was going to be the next Mark Price.
Oh, okay.
But nothing close to it.
Nothing close to it.
Oh, man. So, tonight, we're going to get into the first thing I want to get into, you know, we're going to get into the playoffs, and the playoffs is going to be the bulk of the show for the listeners out there, just so you know. We're going to get into the playoffs, but the first thing I want to hit on, and listeners out there, I don't know if y'all saw this. If you haven't seen it, check it out, YouTube it, whatever you got to do, Google it. It's 2011. It's out there somewhere. Find it, check it out. Look at it for a few minutes. Call in and give your opinion when you get a chance. Cam Newton and John Gruden's QB camp. Oh, Lord. Now, Devon taped it. D taped it. He hadn't seen it yet. I watched it last night. I took the time to watch it. And, you know, as everything with Cam Newton, it's going to be polarizing. Some people are going to point to the good aspects of it, and some people are going to point to negatives. Whether the good outweigh the negatives, that's debatable. What I will say, it was hilarious. It was hilarious. The reason it was hilarious because it reaffirmed some of the things that I thought about Cam. And you know where I kind of stand on Cam. I'm not saying that he's this. I got some questions. He raises some red flags with me. And a conversation. Well, one of my guys, and he raised a great point about character in Cam Newton. I'm gonna say when he said it, I couldn't argue with it. I really couldn't. Cam Newton is the son of a crooked preacher. That tells you everything you need to know about his foundation.
But, you know, if we use that as a compliment for NFL players or any kind of pro player, you would kill it at all. I think Cam Newton's value, now, peep this. I'm saying Cam Newton's value and how you look at it is going to be directly related to this labor agreement.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So if they come out with a rookie salary cap,
you take them number one.
Then it's not going to be a big deal.
Yeah, you take them number one and use your roll of dice.
Because the thing about it is, with Carolina, you already have a guy, you know, at quarterback who can, he's young. You can let him go. You put Cam on the bench and have him mature and see what you got. You know, you can run it that way. And so in some ways you protect it because they got the salary cap and you're not expending, you know, a huge signing bonus and those kind of things to kind of see how that all plays out. And so, I mean, in this NFL, you need two quarterbacks half the time, particularly if you're rebuilding a team, because if you're picking that high, that means you have problems. And so, you know, if you're rebuilding a team, it gives you an opportunity to develop two young quarterbacks and kind of see what you have. And you know, you're going to be focused. Carolina's going to be more of a running team defensively with Rivera, you know, so you're not putting too much pressure on the quarterback to win the game right now anyway. And so, I think that all comes down. But the whole character issue in NFL and football player, first of all, if we dug deep into a lot of these first-round picks, you know, you've been around Division I athletes. You know, if you really dug deep, some people do a better job of disguising than others. Everybody not Tim Tebow. And, you know, we dug into the background of many of these quarterbacks who went first round. People would be saying, damn, you know, thinking they got characters. These are the people they think are really great. And so you know, I don't get too caught up with it. What concerns me is what, kind of what you talked about, is his inability to demonstrate kind of that cerebral thinking. And
part
of that's a product of the offense. So the offense didn't ask them to really – you can see the difference in the Gruden stuff, the little ones I've seen, that even Dalton, who's a, they say is a sharp guy, the offense isn't very complicated. So even when he went to explain, you know, the progressions, he did an all right job, but they're pretty easy progressions. It's not like if you're taking, you know, somebody who's running a pro-style offense and you can really see when they communicate, a guy like Lockett or somebody like that, you know, they're going to give you a little bit more detail because of the nature of the offense. And so the way I look at it is I equate this to almost like the 70s when everybody used to run a lot, some option in their game, some form of option. Quarterbacks ran, like I told you, even Montana, they ran an option at Notre Dame. He ran as well as he was throwing. And to what extent can these guys pick up new things as they're playing? Because that's the era you're in. You're almost in the era almost like the 70s when the wishbone was prevalent. And you weren't really quite sure what a quarterback was like unless he came out of Pitt and was throwing like Marino. I mean, so, you know, I think when you look at this guy, you like, can he pick things up? Is he kind of guy that's coachable? And that part, I think from you who saw, you had a chance to see it, that one might disturb you. Is he a kind of guy that's too into himself that he doesn't even know when he's into himself? And I think that's what you're alluding to, and that can be a concern.
Yeah, and we have a caller on the line. Caller, I want you to introduce yourself real quick and let the listeners out there know who you are. Caller, are you there? We got a caller on the line. They must have stepped away. They're still up on my screen, so we'll get back to the caller. Caller, when you get on, jump in. But what I did want to say, that was one of the huge red flags for me, was watching him and Gruden. When Gruden asked him to draw up the plays, and, you know, I played basketball. I haven't played football since my sophomore year of high school. So, you know, my ability to understand what was going on is very rudimentary. But I know after my senior year of basketball, if you had asked me to draw one of our sets, one of our plays, or run through our continuity offense, I would have done it, and I would have done it in great detail. Where I would have told you what each player on the court was supposed to do and what each player's options were. And it wasn't rocket. What we were running wasn't rocket science, but I think – You commit to learning the details, and you commit to learning what's going on the court, and I think that translates across sports. I think if it's there, it's there, and you see that when a guy breaks down what he does. Because what I wanted to see Cam Newton do is be able to say, "This is what we run. It looks simple, but these are the reads that I'm gonna make. I'm watching the free safety. Why am I watching the free safety? Because if he does this, I'm doing this, and if this corner does this, I'm doing this." He didn't do a very good job of articulating that to me as to why people were doing what and what were the adjustments that needed to be made. If X happens, then we do Z. If Y happens, then, you know, we go to M. He really didn't impress me. Now, I don't know if what he did was par for the course, but what I'm saying is I wasn't blown away by it. Like, damn, he really knows that offense. You know, he really knows that system. I didn't walk away feeling like, and again, if it's a simple system, even if all we did was run a motion and pick and roll in college, I'm going to be able to break down the pick and roll inside and out because that's all we ran. You know what I mean? I'm going to know exactly what I need to do if the defender goes under the screen, over the screen, if my man rolls, when he should roll, if he should pick and pop, if he should step back. You know, I'm going to know all those different things. Because that's all I run, and it's that simple. You know, so I almost say the simplicity of it should allow him to go into much more detail because there's just less to process. So there should have been more clarity. He should have been more concise. He should have been more succinct, and there just should have been more precision to his explanations as to what was going on. And I didn't feel that at all.
Yeah, and I think that's where, I mean, for him, he's got to overcome that hurdle, you know, because what Gruden is looking for is what's your progression? Where are you going first? Where you going second? Where's your check down? You know, are you demonstrating that? You know, and I think, you know, I think that's what, you know, he wants to see. Like, what's your progressions? And, you know, I think that's where, you know, he wants to see kind of what you're talking about in terms of the detail. And I think, like, that's where Cam, you know, has to work on. You know, the key that you have to look at it is, can you teach it? Can he learn it? Because if he can learn it, then this might be a cat that can go a long ways. If you don't think he can, you know, what kind of safeguards do you have? So if you got Jimmy Clausen, who's already a young quarterback, I got some safeguards. He's a little bit older, been a pro a little bit longer, and I can play Clausen for 2 to 3 years and allow.
Hey, you're probably gonna be paying him more too.
Huh?
And you're probably gonna be paying him more too.
Yeah, yeah.
So you might as well put him out there.
Who Cam?
Clausen.
Because
he came in under a different set of parameters, so he probably is actually going to be making more than Cam.
Yeah, and Clausen came out of pro offense, things like that. So you have an opportunity to kind of see what this guy can do, and in a league where quarterbacks get hurt.
Now here's a question I want to throw at you. If you Carolina, how much do you take into the fact that these two dudes have both coming in, they had some sketchy personality issues? How much do you take that into account as far as the competition factor in your locker room, and is that going to play? How is that going to play out in your locker room?
Well, I think
because Clausen didn't come in. Clausen came in with a very cloudy character profile too. And do you want two of those guys competing, or do you want to give a job to a guy who the guy behind him has a huge ego and may feel like he's actually better? You know,
the only reason
the other cat's playing is maybe because they're paying him more. He got a year experience, but he feels he's still better. How much do you put into that if you're Carolina?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily worry about it because particularly in a Rivera, that's going to be a defensive-dominated team, locker room, which is going to create a different dynamic. The power is going to be on the offensive line running game. So when you look at how Rivera is going to rebuild this is, In some ways, they're in the equation. In some ways, they're not. The power of that locker room is going to be on the defensive side. It's going to be an offensive line. It's going to be in a running game. Young boy, come on, pick up the bags, eat the donuts. That's a different dynamic in a locker room that he's coming into than if they had really have to lean on them to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what they're going to look at, these, and this is why Clausen will probably play early if we go this way, is because you're looking for somebody who's, I hate to say this, is managing the game. Because what Rivera is going to do is build a great defense. You know, Carolina's always been able to run the ball. And, they, you know, they're still going to be able to have that kind of attitude. And so I think the veterans will then, and that coach will, especially the defensive coach, is going to control that locker room and control those guys in a different way. As if where I would worry about it is if it was kind of like what was happening in Denver. You know, a young offensive coordinator running the team, or somebody in their first job offensive coordinator running the team, I would probably worry about it as much. But with a defensive guy running the team, then this is going to be a different attitude, different organization. They just going to fall in line.
Yeah.
So I think that in some ways that's probably good for Cam, and that's going to be good for Clausen, is because, you know, with a defensive-minded coach and that kind of thing is really going to kind of put them in their place versus, you know, offensive coordinator who is – coming with a different kind of, you know, attitude, trying to put his offense in. Offense kind of dominates a little bit more, you know, in what's going on. You know, Carolina's going to be clearly a defensive-minded team with that kind of stuff. So, that would be the reason why you take Cam, but that's also the reason why you might take, a defensive player first,
mm-hmm.
too. You know,
right.
So they might
right.
not do that if they feel good about Clausen. But, you know, I think – having to be a defensive head coach would be good for the situation that you're describing.
Yeah. So we still got this caller on the line. Caller, you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Who
are
you?
Oh, this is Nate. This is Nate.
Oh,
Edwards.
The great Nate. Oh, man.
Great. How you doing, man?
The legend.
Last time.
I don't know about
Nate
the great.
Nate came in second in the RSG Tourney Challenge. We want to welcome you to the line. You know, we had Larry Randall on. who was the champ, but it's good to have a second place guy. I'm glad you could spend the evening with us tonight.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'm very thankful that you guys put that on. You know, Duke let me down. I thought Tyree.
They let everybody down.
I thought, you know, having him back in the lineup, you know, they were just gonna roll like they did, you know, like the first six or seven games of the season with him. You know, that's why they played the game. So,
yeah.
It's a tough tournament.
So right now, me and Devon are both kind of talking about the whole, and I don't know if you saw it, but I know you're a football guy, and so I would love to get your perspective on Cam Newton and Gruden's QB camp. Have you seen it?
I have not watched that yet, no.
Okay.
I haven't seen it. I am a fan of Cam Newton. I think he has all the talent and skill to be a great quarterback. The big thing with quarterbacks is finding a system that fits them or having a coach that knows and understands and can mold the person. I know at Auburn he was a huge playmaker, and you know he scrambled out of the pocket, he broke tackles, you know, and part of that's a positive attribute, but again it just depends on in terms of you know what type of offense you go to. So I'm really curious to see how this is all going to play out, and you know with the picks and everything. But he has all the skills, and I think he proved it week after week. And, you know, arguably the best football division in college football. So, you know, he did it every week. He is really consistent with his play. So we'll see what happens.
Nate, I'm going to ask you, you know, Marcus and I have been talking a lot about kind of the character issues and where they come in, particularly with a player that you're going to take at that high pick. And we've been kind of debating back and forth. And, you know, you said that he's playing at a high level every week. But, you know, where do you – when people are evaluating whole kind of the character issues, how do you put that into the equation about, you know, in terms of you evaluating that you think he's going to do well at the next level? I mean, where are you – what kind of emphasis are you putting on the character issue?
I think that, you know, there has to be, you know – You have to put good effort into checking that out. And a big thing is to provide support, especially to those young players, in terms of preparing them. I know, you know, the NFL has kind of their, like, pre-mini camp to work with all the rookies and, you know, to talk to them. But I think the best thing for if whoever would select Cam would be to set him up with veteran players right away. Those who come from a similar background, those who have been successful, to take him under his wing right away. Because there's going to be a lot of influence by friends, by advertisements. You know, it's a business. So I think, you know, a part of that, it is important to look at a person's character. You know, I know the issues with his dad and everything else like that, you know, there's going to be a lot like held over his head in terms of, you know, things that have been done in the past. You know, what was his fault, what wasn't his fault. But I think you have to pay attention to that. And, you know, nobody's perfect. You know, even Tebow, I love Tebow to death. I'm really glad he's had the opportunity to play quarterback, but, you know, I'm sure he's made some mistakes, you know, even though he's pretty much had a flawless character. But a big part of it is that, you know, you surround yourself with good people. And I'm hoping that, you know, whoever takes Cam will make sure they do that right away. But
And I think that's really what it boils down to, is that you have to look into, you have to take into account all of those things, especially at the quarterback position. Again, people are a little bit, I think you can be a little bit more lenient with character issues with a defensive tackle. As long as he got the tools and you know he's going to perform. But with your quarterback, you know, I say with the way things went with Vic and the way things went with Roethlisberger, you know. And I think that's playing a big part in this too, is, you know, people are pointing at the African-American quarterback that haven't done well when you're looking at Cam, but I think the Roethlisberger ghost is looming over Cam Newton. It's just as big as the Vince Young ghost or the Jamarcus Russell ghost in how people are perceiving Cam Newton, simply because, you know, they're so similar. You know, if there was one player that I think you would physically and talent-wise and skill-set-wise compare Cam Newton to, it would be Roethlisberger. And because of the different, the similarities in personality type, you know, where a lot of people classify them as egomaniacs, very self-centered, I think that is rubbing some GMs the wrong way also. But I think D made a great point earlier. You get a rookie wage scale in, and the investment is the risk is going to be heavily outweighed by the possible reward. So you're going to take that flyer. I mean, if he turns out to be the NFL version of Michael Olowokandi, then so be it. But the tools are there. The skill set is there. And if you can get it on the cheap for a couple of years, test it out, see what you got, and then maybe reinvest in it later down the line, or just let it go, then, you know, you're going to see a lot more. I think what you're going to see is a lot more players, young players, get taken off potential than you would have in the past, because the money investment isn't going to be as great, but you're also going to see a high number of busts too, because GMs are going to overlook a lot. They're going to start to overlook character issues a little bit and say, well, if we can get them in the system, get them around some good vets, then we can make this work. It's not a huge investment. Let's go ahead and roll the dice. So you're going to see a lot more guys who may have dropped in under the previous format. And again, it's not sure. We're not 100% sure if we're going to a rookie scale or not, but I think if I'm drafting this year, I'm probably going to draft under the assumption that I'm going to have a rookie scale, rookie wage scale, especially if I'm drafting at the top. Because if you miss out on an opportunity to take Cam Newton with a rookie wage scale, I think you miss a huge golden opportunity to really be patient with him, for one, and maximize your investment.
Yeah, and one thing I would add, because I was trying to get a sense of who the offensive coordinator is going to be, and it's going to be Rob Chudzinski. And Rob actually was the offensive coordinator for the Browns, I think in 2007, where they won 10 games. And so, you know, that might be also, you know, kind of the connection with Clawson and that kind of, you know, that whole thing. But this is a guy, I guess, who knows how to run an offense, has worked well with tight ends. So you think about what Rivera is trying to do in terms of how he's going to set his offense up. It goes back to my whole thing about it. You know, they're going to be, using that tight end, moving the chains, stretching when they can. And so when you look at that kind of, can you bring, you know, two guys along? This might be the kind of offensive coordinator that can work with a Cam Newton and work with Clawson to bring him along the way they need to bring him along. You know, if Rivera can get that defense firmed up enough and get them back on track. And so, you know, I think some of those things if there's a rookie wage scale and some of those elements will determine whether or not Carolina takes them. Now, if Carolina doesn't take them, then you're looking at some other scenarios where, you know, there might not be, you know, the kind of solid foundation that Cam would need to have. So, you know, but, you know, if you're looking at him as a top pick for Carolina, I could see them taking him for some of the reasons we talked about and because they feel like they can bring him along.
Yeah, and I think you hit it on the head too, in terms of going into a defense and oriented football team too, because, you know, they're not going to put the game on his shoulders. It's going to be, you know, rely on the defense of Rivera, and, you know, he's going to be there just to, I don't want to say lose, you know, just to manage or not to lose the game, but, you know, it's a great situation where he's now, like, heading to, like, you know, Indy or San Diego, or, you know, they're going to want him to put up some big points. You know, it's going to be a defensive-oriented football team, and I think it would be a good situation for him to develop his skills. And also, too, with another young quarterback in terms of, you know, battling for a position and, you know, making sure that he doesn't step in day number one as the starting quarterback, which, you know, is a rarity in the NFL as it is. But, you know, he's going to have someone that's young with him battling for the position to keep him, you know, honest. And nowadays, you know, they're going to that second quarterback, you know, when needed, because most teams have two quarterbacks right now that can win ball games. So I think it'd be a good situation for him to continue to battle, and he's not going to, you know, walk into a starting position, but, you know, a lot of pressure hopefully would be taken off of him if selected by the Panthers, because, again, that's going to be a defensive-oriented football team.
And I think you're making sense, and I just got a text from Larry Randall. He's sitting at Aaron Crouch. Remember, he was kind of Cam. But he texted me to Aaron Crouch. I told him to get on the line. He's still talking to Aaron Crouch stuff. Oh, man, Aaron Crouch. He's not even – I don't know where people get things like this. And Larry's supposed to be an informed guy. You know, he won a tournament. Sometimes it tells you that anybody can win a basketball tournament. You know, it doesn't mean you take everything over to football. Eric Crouch, I mean, he's the farthest thing. First of all, Eric Crouch threw like a shot put.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Did you ever see this movie? It was a shot put. He didn't have a – Cam's got a good throwing motion. He's got all that. And people crack me up when they try to compare him to Tebow. I like when you say he was like a lot like Roethlisberger. You know, maybe he holds up to it too long. He'll run. But when you look at his mechanics, I mean, you can look at his mechanics. He doesn't throw like Vince Long. He literally gets elongated, you know, release. He doesn't – I mean, he has a pretty decent release when you look at him. So – and this is a guy, they said, well, he's only played, you know, one big season. He played well. But he's won it just about every level. He won in junior college. So he knows how to win, you know. And so, you know, I think some – you know, I think people get very sensitive because of Vince Young. But I don't even see him as Vince Young. Because he went through a storm. I think if Vince Young had to go through that storm at Texas, Vince Young would have folded.
Yeah, man, I agree.
And see, just as much as I'll say Vince Young would have folded, I think the reason Vince Young would have folded, and this is why my boy's comment about Cam being the son of a crooked preacher resonated so much, is that Vince Young would have folded. Vince Young would have folded because of the way he was brought up. Because he was brought up never having people really criticize him, which is why he doesn't handle criticism and adversity well.
Yeah.
And the same reason Michael Vick's background kind of pulled him down a little bit is because Michael Vick came up in an environment where he was a man. He was supporting a bunch of people. He had a bunch of people in his circle, and he felt he had a responsibility to take care of all these people who didn't have his best interests at heart. That pulled him down. Jamarcus Russell, he was never really pushed. He's just lazy. That's part of how he came up. So how does being a son of a crooked preacher, because that's something that we can't overlook, because this is his daddy, all right? He was raised in a two-parent home. His father's very influential in his life, but his father's got some character issues. Now, for a lot of guys whose fathers do have character issues, they may not necessarily be around.
Yeah.
Right?
But
you have to account that may play a role in who Cam Newton is, right?
You can't say it don't. But that plays a role also if you look at somebody like a Galbert. We don't know anything about some of these other kids and they people around them.
Right, but what you do know is Cam is the son of a crooked preacher. that's extra nefarious right there, man. That's extra bad. Like, not only is this cat crooked, he's not just your average crooked hustler, swindler on the street. He's a man of the cloth.
So he said he's trying to get the building fund, man. That's all he was trying to do.
You know what I'm saying? This is a man of the cloth, but hey, it's a way you go about getting the building fund. We know that. Yeah, he's just trying to do the Lord's work, but it's a way you go about doing the Lord's work, which is indicative of your worship of the Lord. You see what I'm saying?
Good point, yeah.
So if this brother got disconnected to the Lord and he expects the Lord not to see him taking his 80 G's, what does that say about his character? Because God be everything.
Mate, you just made it in. You can't even tell craziness.
So that's all I'm saying is, if I'm a GM, you know, GMs, I'm telling you, every GM, they need to hire, we could call it a cultural consultant, for all I care. But when anytime you catch the cat who balled out in his contract year, you need that quote unquote cultural consultant, you know, to interpret whether or not you should give this brother some money. As Rick James said, you don't need to give everybody no money. If you catch my drift. So they need a cultural consultant to figure out, hey, if I hand this cat over, is he going to Haynesworth me real quick after I give him this money? You see, I could have called Haynesworth a mile away.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You got your Jerome James, your Albert Haynesworth, cats like that who, as soon as they get that check, oh, they ain't showing up to work like they used to show up to work. They ain't coming in balling like they used to ball.
We call that the Daryl Dawkins syndrome.
Right. And so you got to have that cultural consultant come in and say, what is this? Tell me about the history of the crooked preacher in the African American community. What does this mean? And really break it down.
Hide the
wind. Are we looking at, is this Reverend Creflo Dollar's son? Are you going to hand him over the keys to your franchise? It's a legitimate question. It's a legitimate question. It's a legitimate critique. It's something you got to consider.
What's a good point?
It's funny, I'm being funny about it, but I think if I'm a GM, it's something that I do have to consider, that he grew up in a home with a man who was supposed to be a man of God, a man of the cloth, but then tried to cheat the system. That goes against the principles that he's supposed to stand for. So, how does that environment influence this young man? You see what I'm saying? Just the same way it was foul, it was bogus, but the same way the Tampa Bay Cat asked Dez White about his mama being a prostitute. That was foul. That was against it. That was below the line. Below the line. That was bogus. But at the same time, I can understand why he would ask that, because if this is your influential parental figure, you know, what effect did that have on you? Do you have trust issues? You know, do you have issues with relationships? You know, do you have issues with females? You know, those are things that if I'm a GM, I'm about to give you millions of dollars, I might want to know. Now, there's a better way to ask that question. There's a better way to get that information than asking a young man if his mother was a prostitute, because you might get punched in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a legitimate question when you think about what you're about to do. You're about to make this young man a millionaire. If I'm going to make somebody a millionaire, there's a lot I want to know. And there's a lot I'm going to take into account, especially if my ability to continue to generate funds is tied to this person. So, I mean,
no,
the reality
of
the situation is he is the son of a crooked preacher.
You know, that's a hard one to go up against, you know. And, you know, I guess what you have to figure out is how much that will impact him, how much he's able to separate, you know. I can't decide who my daddy is. I can only decide who I am. So what you have to figure out is how much is he his own person.
Right.
And I think that's something that, you know, you spend a lot of money to investigate.
Yeah,
you know, I'm guilt by association. I understand that, but I run this. I'm out daddy's house, and I'm running my stuff. So you got to get a sense of who's in charge. And I think that's again what's important, to have somebody like a Rivera, a demon-minded kind of guy, who's not gonna mince words.
Yeah, and it's not even about who's in charge. It's about what value set is he operating under.
Yeah,
is he operating under the value set that I'm above it? Because, for his again, this
is
the preacher.
That could be it for a check. You could operate in that value set, but a good, different thing about being a pro than being at Auburn, don't nobody give a damn. So however you set that context up, he going to quickly find himself in a space in which he going to have to reevaluate that. And they're going to put him under the pressure cooker, and that becomes even more important. That's why I say that the salary cap piece or the salary structure for rookies is very important, because that allows them to really get him in the situation where he needs to be with them veteran players, understanding your pecking order, the whole thing. And that's going to be even situated by the fact you got a defensive coach. So, like, you know, you ain't leading with you anyway. You know, can you handle that? And so, yeah, you're going to test that early. You know, and that's why I think Carolina is probably the best place for him to go, because all that stuff you're talking about ain't going to matter. Only place that matters is if he's going to a place where it's offensive coordinator or offensive head coach. Then that gets accentuated a little bit versus a place that's dominated by a defensive culture. He ain't coming in like that. He carrying a linebacker's bags. Get used to it, young boy. And we don't need you to win right now anyway. Sit down and check out. So then you see, can he handle that? And that's the big difference with it. That's why it's good to have a crosser, you know, somebody who might be ready to go. So that's the only way I would look at that. Cause I agree with everything you're saying, but I think depending on which team he gets drafted by, he's going to quickly be tested because, you know, they could easily just sit him down and wait for you to grow up.
Yes, that's just a point I wanted to raise, man. So while we still got Nate on the line, I want to get his insights. The draft is, what, 8-9 days away right now, and I wanted to get Nate's opinion on some of the other guys coming out and who he thinks is going to have a major impact. Football is always dependent upon what team you go to, I think more so than a lot of other sports. But with football, because system and philosophy are so important, I think, you know, with the guys who are picked, what team you go to has a huge impact. But just some of the guys that during the college football season, or if you've been paying attention to the combine and the workouts and the pro days, some guys that have caught your eye or caught your attention, and some guys that you think are going to have an impact on whatever team they wind up with.
I would say, like, right now, I would think Cam would go number one. That's just my opinion. Currently looking at the draft and all the different players that are coming out, I have him up towards the top. I pay attention mainly to a lot of the quarterbacks and receivers. I was an offensive type of guy. Other quarterbacks I like, I really like Ryan Mallett from Arkansas. I thought he was a real proven guy. The guy from TCU, Andy Dalton, those are a couple of the guys that I really liked watching. I think that will make a great impact right away coming in. You know, running back-wise, I think, you know, there's a lot out there. But none that, like, really, really stick out for me at this point in time. I really don't have any favorites going out there. Trying to think more so some of the other big names.
Who's your favorite squad? You a Bear fan or a Packer fan? I know
I'm
kind of in Beloit, that border town. You a Bear fan or a Packer fan?
I'm all Chicago. I'm Chicago Bears,
okay.
Cubs, Bulls, Blackhawks, you name it, I'm all about it. And I know right now as a Bears fan, I'm looking for a lineman.
Okay.
You know, whatever offensive lineman that's best that we can take. I mean, we were just so beat up last year. And so that's who right now I would be looking for as the Bears GM right now is looking for a lineman.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. You want somebody to keep Cutler upright from hurting whatever, so he don't got to stand on the sideline with that dumbass look on his face no more. I dig that.
Yeah.
We want to prevent that from happening. Let's get a lineman in town so we prevent this whole scenario. Keep that boy upright. So that's another interesting story coming out of the NFL that I wanted to get into real quick. The Patriots have been bringing in a lot of the quarterbacks, and to me that's good business, I think, on their part, because again, looking at the way things could go with a rookie wage scale, if I'm them and I'm in a position to get a Ryan Mallett or a Jake Locker or a Dalton or a Christian Ponder, or one of these kind of outside of Cam and Gabbert, I don't think they'll really have a shot at either one of those guys. But Brady's 34. They got him locked up till he's 37. I say I pull a Aaron Rodgers move and snatch up one of these young guys, let him sit for 3 or 4 years till he's ready.
And by that time,
Brady's sliding on out the door, and you bring in the next kid. I think that's a good pull by them. And I don't know if that's what they're doing, or if they're just putting up smoke screens, or trying to lead people off in another direction, which they very well could be doing. You never know with Belichick, you know, brother's got some tricks up his sleeves. He could be doing a lot of different things. But to me, that would be a smart play right now. Do you think it's time for them to start looking for a replacement for Brady?
I definitely think so. I mean, he's getting up there in age. I think that'd be a very smart move by them. But also, too, I know they're usually, you know, looking ahead, you know, have an idea who they're going to select in terms of, let's say, if someone is just coming out of contract or whatever it might be. But I do agree that it might be, you know, smart for them to get one of the young guys. And, again, just like Rodgers, you know, let him have 3 years, you know, under the system and learn it, you know, to the T, you know, or they can do a blindfold, you know. And I think that would be very, very smart of them to do that, because I tell you right now, they just keep reloading. It doesn't matter. They lose players every year, offense and defensively, but they're always there at the top. So they have a system on both ends, offensively and defensively, that's been working. You know, again, you're talking about crooked people, you know, whether there's extra films being taped or whatever it might be with Belichick, you know, I won't go there. But, you know, I do think they have a system going both ways where it does not matter, you know, where you can drop a Randy Moss and say, hey, we're still going to win without you, you know, even though the playoffs proved differently. But, you know, they have the system, and I think the Packers played it. You know, you being a huge Bears fan, I think the Packers played it well. They knew what they had in Rodgers when, you know, they let go of Favre and said, no, this is it, you're done. And I think arguably Rodgers the last 3 years, again, this is a Bears fan saying, has been, you know, possibly the top quarterback consistently. I've had him in my fantasy leagues, and he's week in and week out has won ball games. On the other hand, too, I think he has the best wide receiving core that can, you know, after the catch, they break tackles and they make plays. But, again, you have to have a guy that gives it to him, too. So, you know, I think that'd be very intelligent by New England to get a young quarterback and, you know, get a pretty good deal, because, you know, I'm not sure how much longer Brady has. And all it takes is just one twist of the knee, and you're done. So we'll see what happens there.
And, I mean, looking at the fact, I think they got 4 picks in the top 60. So, you know, you're saying that like might look at being a quarterback. And the fact they got 4 picks, I know they got some needs to, you know, continue to meet. They got a young defense, you know, opportunity to, you know, still continue to build that defense and, you know, get some few more pieces on offense. But, you know, when you got 4 picks in the top 60, one of those quarterbacks is going to be there. You know, and if you want to take a Mallett who, you know, again, that's why I say culture and organization makes a difference. You can bring a kid like that into New England, and he just going to fall in line. Because that's the climate of the team. But, if you know, if you feel like you can take a chance, and in 3 or 4 years, this guy's practicing with Tom Brady every day, learning with him every day, growing up with him, and this is a guy you can get on the field when Tom goes, and he actually can, you know, everybody knows he's got big-time skills, but they've been worried about what he can do. And Belichick's never been scared away from those players. If he felt like, you know, Corey Dillon, I mean, you could go down the line, Moss, you know, those guys are coming to the locker room for the most part and just fell in line, and especially a rookie going to come in and just do. So he can afford to take a chance with a guy like that, or he might hit on some of the, like a locker or something like that. So he's got 4 picks in the top 60. I mean, this is classic Patriots.
Yeah.
They went on that great run last year, and he's got 4 picks in the top 60. I mean, that's why I said those teams who build through the draft don't use a lot of free agency. I mean, Patriots use some, but for the most part, they've always built through the draft. You know, they bring kids up through their culture. And so, I mean, he's got four in the top 60, and that's dealing.
Not only that,
yeah, I mean, they're brilliant at figuring out right when the guy still has some value and moving him right at that moment before he jumps the shark. You know, they did it with Seymour. They did it with Moss. You know, they get picks, they get value for them while they still have value, and they don't wait too long, you know, where now you got this poor situation, you know. I think for them it'd be a great move. They're in a perfect position. You know, again, with a rookie wage scale, it's much less of a gamble. It's much less of an investment. You make that move and you skate, you know. You see what you got and you work with it and you make it work. But, I wanted to throw that out there to see what you guys thought about that in particular. Another team that should be thinking this way is the Colts. You know, because Peyton Manning ain't going to be there forever either.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is a great year because there are so many quality quarterback prospects for teams who have quarterbacks who are long in the tooth, great quarterbacks, to get somebody in under this new system and just hang on to them for a moment, see what you got. You know, it's a low-risk, high-reward investment. And this is the time. You know, this is the time. You get them in the system. They can watch a great work. And I think people discount how much that helped Aaron Rodgers just as much as being in the system and being able to learn the system. But also just watching somebody great do it and somebody make the right decisions on the field, you know, I think that also helped because you get to see what it looks like to actually make the right throw, to make the right read. You get to watch that every day. But then on top of that, with guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, you get to see that work ethic and how hard they work and how dedicated they are to perfecting their craft. And when you get to see that as a young guy, you have no choice but to fall in line. And as a coaching staff, you can see right away, okay, either this kid is going to pan out or he's not. He's got a perfect example here of what it takes to work. He's either matching this guy's work ethic or exceeding it. If he's not, he's not what we need, and we can move on.
Yeah.
No,
Go ahead, Nate.
No, I definitely agree with that, especially when you're, you know, under the tutelage of, you know, two future Hall of Famers. Again, people that have worked as hard on the field, off the field, watching films, you know, it would just – I wish, you know, speaking of, you know, that, like, if Cam could be picked up by someone, you know, in terms of learning how to handle yourself as a leader. Because I think a lot of times, especially for me, black quarterbacks, they're looked as arrogant or cocky or, you know, whatever it might be. But you need that confidence. Quarterbacks are leaders. They're the coaches on the field. So, you know, to be able to have a good example in someone like one of those two, you know, to show, you know, what you need to do on the field, off the field, in way of handling yourself. You know, I think that, you know, for those organizations, these are critical drafts. Because, like you said, they're not going to last forever. But, I mean, if you look at Tom Brady, what was he, like a 7th or 8th round draft choice? You know, I think the Belichicks, you know, it seems like they're always a step ahead of the game. Whether they're picking someone up that someone else released, I forget their small little running back that they picked up from the Jets, you know, that stepped in it. Yeah, you know, so it's just like they have so much knowledge not only of who they're bringing in, but also to the other teams and what fits in their system. So I think, you know, ultimately, speaking specifically with New England, I think they can hold off even a little bit later, you know, in the later rounds and find someone that, you know, could still work in their system but might, you know, not necessarily be a first or second round choice, but maybe a third or fourth round choice. So, you know, a lot of times people look at it on paper, but again, you never know until you bring them into camp and you see how they handle the pressure of being an NFL quarterback. The game is just so much faster.
Yeah, one kid I think who seems like a Patriots type of guy is a kid out of Nevada, the Kaepernick, Colin Kaepernick.
I was just about to say Kaepernick. Me and you are just thinking of the same. When you said it, I said Kaepernick. He's a steal. You watch the guy play. He can throw. He can run. He reminds you of Brady in terms of the build. but he's more athletic. And when you said that, I was just about to say, I was trying to look for his name. We said Kaepernick. I said, that's a guy that I could see stealing everybody and realizing this guy might be the best of all of them in the draft. When I watch him play, he's like magical. This guy can play.
Yeah.
He can run, throw. He can do it all. And you don't hear a lot of people talking about it. And I'm just like, are you crazy? So when you said that, Marcus, I was like, you're like in my head, man. Get out of my head.
Hey, that's why we do a show together, man. That's why we do this.
You know, you're going for the name. When you said that, I said, I can't believe it. That came out of his mouth. I can believe it. Great minds think alike.
Exactly. And that's what it is. That's our story, and we're sticking to it also. But while we still got Nate hanging on with us, let's go ahead and transition into some of this playoff talk because, man, we had a hell of a game with the Knicks and the Celtics tonight before we got on the air that just wrapped up as we were getting on air tonight. And, again, if you're out there and you want to call in, the number is 347-989-0844. Also, I'm on the chat. Larry, hit me up. Larry Randall, the RSG tournament winner, hit me up on chat, and he and I went back and forth for a little bit. He kept it real. Anybody else out there, feel free to stop in. Hit us up on Facebook. The links are up, so feel free to join us. Join the resistance. Get on with the Renegades, RSG, Real Sports Guys Radio. We having a good time tonight. The playoffs, fellas. Now, this first weekend, we saw quite a few upsets of lower seeds beating higher seeds on their home floors. I just want to get y'all initial impressions, and what do you make of that?
Well, I was on another show on Blog Talk Radio. Mo, if you're listening, and Skimmy and Hallmark, you know, thanks for being on your show the other night. We talked a little about it, and you know what's great about this is that it's a mixture of, you know, some of our, you know, top teams showing some age. It's a mixture of matchups. It's like the right mix of gumbo. What we saw this weekend, we saw some teams who are on the rise, learning how to win, kind of things, matchups, and a whole bunch of things. So that's what I loved about the weekend. The biggest surprise, there's a couple surprises, but the New Orleans game in terms of how that all, Chris Paul, and you know, what it showed for me with the Lakers is, you know, their ability to defend that elite point guard is going to be an issue. Derek Fisher can't stay with him. Kobe is still, you can see Kobe's not where he is. You know, before you could probably get away with putting Kobe on that player, but where Kobe is in terms of dealing with injuries and how he's healing, you can see sometimes he's struggling. But, you know, Chris Paul put on a clinic. Now, I don't think that's sustainable, but I think that's the other thing. And some of these upsets, the other thing that I also noticed is that you can do it for one game, but I'm not sure if people can close out. So that's the other thing. Like, you know, people are playing well, but to close a team out, you know, for Memphis to close out, you know, San Antonio is going to be something. You got to be able to close them out, and close them out is the hardest thing to do in the playoffs. So, I mean, I think it's a mixed gumbo. I think it's revealing a lot of things that we kind of thought that were going, and some of the things that you know, we weren't quite aware of was happening. So, you know, that's kind of my initial observation that, you know, it was just. What you're seeing is this weird intersection of a lot of stuff, matchups, age, a new arrival of some players emerging. All that stuff is kind of coming together in this first round.
Yeah, it's a longer series. I think they can't, just give up on the Lakers or the Spurs, you know, losing game one. And, you know, a lot of people like to just, okay, they're done, they're through. I mean, a lot of, that's why the coaches get paid what they get paid. You know, they see different areas where they can exploit teams, and I think, you know, you hit it on the head in terms of the Lakers. They're going to have some issues and troubles with the Hornets. You know, at the point guard, as you saw, just with what Paul I was able to do. But what good coaches do, what good teams do, you know, they look at the film, they analyze it, and then, you know, they get ready for the rest of the series in terms of how they're going to play it and, you know, provide help to Fisher. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, again, how things progress for the next matchup. You know, the Bulls actually got away with one, too. You know, I'm a huge Bulls fan, and just watching that game with 6 minutes to left, I thought, you know, there's no way they're going to win that game. But then just Rose came into his own, and, I mean, basically showed to me why he should be the MVP. So, you know, there's going to be matchup issues, but I think the Lakers are going to be okay. I think the Spurs are going to be okay. You know, they're both veteran teams, and I think in the locker room with, you know, the coaches and the players, they're going to make whatever adjustments they need to be, and they'll take care of the series.
The one thing I want to say about the Spurs is I think their biggest thing, when I said when I was on this other show, I was talking about this. They remind me of the Peyton Sonics. They played this style in the regular season that was great for the regular season. I mean, they were able to get a lot of wins because they played this up-tempo style. But that's not really who the Spurs are. That's like Utah not running a screen and roll. It's like it almost is like Popovich said, if I'm going to have the chance, he's not even pull up the white flag. We're just going to kind of let it go. And he was almost uncomfortable with playing that style because it's not really what he would rather play. And it's whether or not – I don't think they're going to lose this series, but what it does reveal, you know, even without Ginobili, even with Ginobili, that their defensive presence isn't going to be as strong because they don't bring that size. They just don't have the same emphasis on defense. And then they don't have that kind of just that physical pounding that they do to you on offense and stuff. So that presence of San Antonio, I feel like the regular season was almost like fool's gold. And so that's the part that I worry about with San Antonio is that their style that they have to play to win isn't the kind of style that's going to win the playoffs, which is not Popovich type of basketball.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said in regards to San Antonio. The Spurs, I've said it all season. I haven't been sold on their style of play and their roster as far as being able to contend for a seven-game series. Memphis is bigger than they are. Memphis is younger than they are. I wouldn't be surprised if there was an upset in that series. I also wouldn't be surprised if the Spurs ran off four straight games and won the series 4-1. That's the way I feel about a lot of these series right now. The Lakers and the Hornets, the Lakers are going to have a hell of a time dealing with CP3 for the rest of this series. And I think what makes the Hornets tough is that they can have CP3 out there as well as Jarrett Jack, who's also a pretty good ball handler, pretty good at pick and roll situations. So Fisher's got to pick his poison. And you know, I think last year they got away with playing Kobe on Rondo in the finals, which is really probably the only time Kobe guarded a point guard last year in the playoffs because Rondo can't shoot.
Yeah,
you can't lay off and stand, you know, 6 feet away from Chris Paul because he'll knock down shots.
Yep.
And I think CP3 just had to send the world a reminder that, hey, I am arguably the best point guard in the league. And, yeah, Derrick Rose is having a great season, but don't forget – who I am. And that, to me, that's what that was. That was just like, I was like, oh yeah, CP3 is in the playoffs this year. You know, and seriously, I was watching the game like, oh, I forgot Chris Paul was cold. he made Fish look, and Fish was just doing dumb stuff. It was like, Fish, don't pick him up at half court. What the hell is you doing? That just means by the time y'all get to the three-point line, he will be to beat your ass already. He go burn your ass. Back up. Man, it was fun to watch, though. It was fun to watch, man.
Yeah.
But that series, I think, and there was a part of that game that I watched that whole game. And when Aaron Gray, as much as Aaron Gray is Aaron Gray, he's not a stud by any means, but he's 7 feet, 250-something pounds, which allowed them to match up with Bynum and and Gasol and Odom. I think now they're down to Okafor, and I don't know who else they got as big man, but they're thin now. And so I think it's going to, the series is going to take on a different complexion because I think they're going to get beat up around the box. So that one's going to be different. The two series that I think are really interesting are Indiana and Chicago, and then Denver and New Orleans. I mean, Denver and OKC. Those are the ones that I think are really interesting right now. Because I actually think Denver may beat Oklahoma City. Matter of fact, I'm going to go on record and say Denver's going to beat Oklahoma City. I'm going to say that now. Watching that first game, Denver's just too damn deep. All they got to do is get this next game. If they get this next game, I think it's a wrap for Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City, they're playing in a great home environment right now. They kind of got that whole small market, Arco Arena type feel down there where, you know, it's the only show in town. And so everybody's out. Everybody's going nuts. Everybody's crazy. Everybody's into the team. They got a real wholesome team, kind of like the Rose Garden in the late 90s. You know, the mid-90s when Portland was good and they had those good teams, those good Blazers teams before the Jailblazers came to town. And the Rose Garden used to be rocking, and it was just a real wholesome basketball environment. That's what they got going down in OKC right now. And I think they benefited from that in the first game. But Denver was right there with them the whole time. And I think if Denver can steal a game in Oklahoma City, which I think they will be able to, because, you know, as much as we talk about the Perkins effect, Nene was punking Perkins. Nene was giving Perk the business. He was giving Perk the business, something serious. So, I mean,
what I would add to that, I think you hit the other thing I'll add, is that they also, you know, Denver got enough for the crazy factor. They're like three crazy factor kind of cats on this.
They're like three generations deep in crazy. I mean, you got some old crazy in Kenyon. You got kind of some mid-level crazy in Chris Anderson, and then you got some young crazy in J.R. Smith. So they like three levels deep in crazy. I mean, when you got three guys on your team with neck tats,
these are cats who are not looking to work anywhere else.
You know, most teams got maybe one guy with a neck tat. Maybe two, if you got two, you know, okay, you kind of walking that. But they got three, maybe four or five guys with neck tats on the Denver team. So they deep and crazy. You know, but one thing I will say about that Denver team, and this is something that I've been wanting to point out, and I've been wanting to unveil this theory I have on the show, and I kind of previewed it a little bit on Facebook. But it's the non-winning as superstar syndrome is what the NBA has right now. They have all these non-winning as superstars who don't have no leadership ability. Dwight Howard, Carmelo Anthony, you know. But they want to team up with other non-winning-ass superstars to try to win a championship. And not realizing, y'all just created a team full of non-winning-ass players. Miami.
Non-winning plus non-winning equal non-winning.
Right.
That's the product of non-winning.
And you see, Denver has a totally different personality. They have a totally different vibe as a team. They're more defensive. They're more gritty. They get after it more. They play harder. They play with more intensity than they ever did when Melo was there. Why? Because Melo was a non-winning-ass superstar. Yes, he's a superstar. Yes, he's a big name. But he don't got that leadership, which, again, is why you talked about it last week when you were talking about Derrick Rose and the impact that he has, that there's no metric out there that can measure the fact that he plays hard every play, and that rubs off on his teammates.
Everybody else expects to play hard, even when he's on the bench. And so you can't use that plus-minus to, like, evaluate between – him and LeBron, because that's a reflection of leadership. LeBron's not building the expectation that you continue to play at that level when he's not on the court.
Right.
When you got two other, you're still gonna have two other superstars on the court. So
right.
Right. I mean that's something you can't. And Derrick Rose has that. Leadership is no question with Derrick Rose.
Yeah, and that's what you see with Denver. Nene's the leader of that team now.
That's right.
And he's brought a totally different attitude to that team, where it's a mean streak, but it's a mean streak with a purpose. Where before they just seemed like loose cannons.
That's right.
Now they seem like they kind of reined it in a little bit. Carl has seemed like he has more control over the team.
Yep.
You know, because now if you ain't playing, I got four other dudes from the Knicks who we got in the Carmelo trade who I can put in for your ass. So it's either play or don't play. You know, it's either do what I want to do, play smart, or don't play at all. You know, so
right.
There's a different atmosphere with that team. But that series is real interesting to me because that's a perfect example of when you have a now-winning-ass superstar leave, you know, and you bring in some guys who are more focused. And I think when you look at the league in the late 90s, the early 2000s, you had a lot of non-winning-ass superstars. But they didn't even pretend to want to win. Like, you had T-Max and, you know, the Marberries and the Vince Carters and guys like that who were quote-unquote superstars. But you never, ever heard T-Max saying, I want to go to Houston to win championships. He went to Houston because they offered him a max deal. He went to Orlando because they offered him a max deal. Not necessarily because he wanted to win. Same thing with Vince Carter. Vince Carter never made a career move that was based upon winning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he never signed with a team to win.
Mm-hmm.
He went where he can get the most money.
Yep.
And now you have an era of guys who want to win, but at the same time, you have a guy like Dwight Howard. He want to win. I ain't going to take that from him. He wants to win, but he don't know how to lead. Because there's no way a team led by the biggest, most dominant big man in the league should ever lose a home court playoff game to damn Atlanta.
Yep.
And Atlanta got talent. I ain't going front. They got talent. But they still the Hawks. They still a well-paid AAU team.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
they haven't won a playoff series since Doc was playing.
Exactly.
Doc Rivers is playing.
Exactly. And so, as much as Dwight Howard has made progress in that sense, he hasn't made the progress where his attitude and his intensity is rubbing off on his teammates and the way he plays. Or maybe it is rubbing off on his teammates, which is why they're so damn iffy.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's so damn iffy. He's hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's why you see the Hornets, they can steal a game from the Lakers. Why? Because CP3 is going to will them to a win. And so I think right now is we're in an era where we got to separate the real from the fake. And there are a lot of guys who are catching this non-winning-ass superstar syndrome, where they're a non-winning-ass superstar, and they want to go with another non-winning-ass superstar and try to win something. And it don't work. Carmelo.
Mm.
I mean, Amari ain't never won nothing.
Mm.
Amari ain't never going to win nothing because he Amari. He's Stat. He's Stat. His nickname is Stat. He worried about numbers.
The only one in that equation that won got hurt.
Right. Right. And he didn't want to leave.
Yeah,
he was happy.
He
was happy where he was at. You know what I'm saying? But one of these non-winning-ass superstars, when a globe tried to cross the country, go to a big market, and Carmelo balled tonight. He played well, but he's still not winning that superstar. He's not going to win nothing in the East. They're not going to get past Boston. They're probably going to get swept because they just ain't got enough pieces right now. And then the other real interesting series to me is the Bulls and the Pacers. And the reason I find this one real intriguing is because the Bulls got to figure some things out real quick. And this is why I said the Bulls were kind of an unknown commodity when it comes to the playoffs. Because when you get to the playoffs and you got to play a team possibly seven times in a row, can't get exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that the Lakers can't handle elite point guards, it's out there now. Cat's out the bag. You know, the fact, I think what's being exposed with the Bulls right now is that Bulls is a little soft.
Mm-hmm.
And at any given time, you only have to guard three of the guys on the court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the other thing that I think, that's the reason that they're having a little bit of trouble with Indiana right now, is Indiana, one, has a pretty good-sized front line. They got a lot of length and athleticism on their front line. And so that helps because that's ingredient one. And there are two guys that you can always – there's usually two guys on the court you can help off of. One is Noah, and then one is whoever's playing two guard for the Bulls. And so those are two guys you can always help off of and always looking at Derrick Rose. Those are two defenders who are always keyed in on what Derrick Rose is. And so that's something that Thibodeau is going to have to figure out how to game plan around, because I think as they get deeper in, when they're going against the Celtics or the Heat or even the Magic, that may play a bit more of a factor. Now, I'm not worried so much about the Magic because they're just poor defensively to begin with. But when you're going against the Heat or the Celtics, who can actually play some decent defense, that may be something that, I think that's something that's been exposed for the Bulls to this point. The other person that's being exposed, and he played well tonight, but Rondo is looking like a liability in my opinion. Because the boy can't figure out how to I'm looking at him like I looked at Dwight Howard last year in the playoffs. Friggin' get in the gym all summer and learn how to damn shoot a basketball. Because you're killing your team. How many times can you come down court and your man is standing at the free throw line and you ain't even got caught half court yet? You know, daring you to pull up 4-3, and you can't do it. At some point, you got to add that piece to your game if you want to truly be a star, a superstar. I mean, I watched them in the first Knicks game. Like, dude, they're not even guarding you. And every time he shot a shot, it was broke. So, I mean, you know, at the beginning of the season, there was a whole who's better, Rondo or Rose. It easily is Rose. And Rondo is actually starting to look worse. I mean, tonight he scored 26-some points, and almost all of them was in the paint, which is great. But I don't think he's going to get those opportunities when he's not playing the Knicks.
Yeah,
you know, he's not going to be able to run up in the lane on the Heat. He's not going to be able to run up in the lane on the Bulls or the Magic. You know, if they get to the finals, he's not going to be able to do that against the Lakers. You know? So, I don't know. Rondo's looking a little bit like a liability. So there's some things that, you know, throughout the playoffs are going to be exposed with some of these teams that we consider elite. And I think with Boston, Rondo is kind of a weak link right now. He's got to be able to knock down some outside shots. Chicago's got to figure out how to game plan around the fact that teams are really going to start to key in on Rose. And, you know, when you're playing 3-on-5 on offense, it's going to make it really hard for Rose. And if Indiana can make it tough, think about what Boston and Miami are going to do. And Denver, I mean, I like Denver. I like Denver to make some noise in the playoffs. And like I said, I'm going on record. They're going to take down the they're going to take down the Thunder.
Wow, and if that happens, the trade and everything else.
Yeah.
Everybody talk about how the trade and everything is going to come out for Boston. You know, if the Thunder lose in the first round in Denver, that's going to be, you know, they thought they really had an opportunity. That's going to be disappointing. And is that going to be something that's going to be a coach's, you know, in terms of are you going to, they're going to make a decision about the coach based on that?
Who's that?
OK City. Because that would be a disappointment if they lost in the first round.
It would be.
That coach is
I would still think Brooks would be, I still think Brooks will be safe for this year. But I think, you know, I think they would start to look at the coaching. I don't think it would be the coaching. I think what would get them in this series, in my opinion, is that outside of Westbrook and Durant, they don't have another consistent. They kind of have that same situation that the Bulls have, where they have a young team, and because they have somewhat of a young team, they don't have any other scorers other than Westbrook and Durant. And it took both of them scoring almost 40 points in the last game for them to beat Denver by a couple points. So they have those two scores and then a lot of role players and a lot of unproven guys. Like Harden can score, but Harden is still unknown as to whether he can score in the playoffs. Scoring in the regular season and scoring in the playoffs are very different.
Very different. Mm-hmm.
And Harden hasn't proven whether or not he can score in the playoffs. Whereas I think the Nuggets, they got so many damn guys that they can throw at you on any given night, and they can play in a lot of different ways. They can match up with pretty much any team in the playoffs. They can go big. They can go small. They can play fast. You know, I still got to see whether or not they can play a solid half-court game or not, but I see they got the pieces there.
Okay. Nate, what's your assessment of the playoffs?
I think it's just, you know, really still too early to tell. I mean, I do agree, you know, with those game ones, you know, you have your veterans, you have your young teams, again, like the Bulls, and I think, you know, what makes me happy is the Bulls have got away, I think, with two kind of ugly wins. You know, but then again, looking at a team like Indianapolis, I think you kind of guys both have hit it off on the head in terms of looking at teams. I mean, you have these teams that are out there, again, that don't have those what was your name for them, Marcus?
Non-winning-ass superstar.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have teams without them. So you have, you know, guys that are out there that literally are playing with no pressure right now. And as you know, in basketball, I mean, that's the thing, you know, this is pressure time. You know, when you get down to those final 2 minutes and you're within a possession and then you're at the free throw line, you have a lot of teams out there that, you know, pressure is nothing to them. And that's the one thing I have to say, you know, about those teams that have been there, that have done it, that have won it. They've had those players that have stepped up, that have been followed, you know, and then they go to the line, they hit those shots, or they make the big shot. And that's what, you know, I tell you right now, a guy that I don't like, but he's done year in and year out, is Kobe Bryant. Every single year, when it comes down to that clutch shot or hitting those clutch free throws, he does it. And the guy that, you know, LeBron James, I mean, he's one that, you know, has choked. You know, arguably, you know, the best two players right there, but you've seen one that's done it, one that has rings, one that hasn't done it, that has zero rings. So I think, you know, the big thing is, you know, you have those teams, but yet you have that superstar that gets things done, you know, and makes the big shots or drops off, you know, the pass there when he gets double teamed and hits the wide open guy. For example, when you're talking about for the Bulls in terms of scoring, like when Rose was driving, double teamed, the first time the Bulls took the lead in Korver, hit the three. He was wide open, hit the three. So, I mean, that just showed, you know, maturity, you know, by Derrick Rose in terms of, you know, he's not always going to take that shot, but he's going to make that pass when he needs to. And then you have that guy, that role player that hit the shot that he needed to hit. So, you know, that's one of the things that really excite me about watching the Bulls, is because that's a game they should have lost. But a young team, you know, in the last 2 to 3 minutes, Derrick Rose took over, but he was just beyond his age and years in terms of maturity and the way he handled those last 2 minutes to help the Bulls win. So, I mean, the road's not going to be easy. You know, they're going to have to go to Indy. They're going to have to play there. And I think that's going to, you know, open up some eyes. But in terms of the playoffs, I mean, you know, I think veteranship's going to be a big key for Boston to get through. And again, the Spurs and, you know, the Lakers, I think they're just going to do it just in terms of veterans being there, doing it, and just having that confidence. But, you know, that's why they still play the games. And, you know, Denver, I agree with you that I could see them definitely winning that series, just like you said, because they have a team now, you know. And before that, with Melo, and then, you know, just with Carl getting into it, they don't have those distractions now. So it's going to be a fun series to watch, you know, and all the teams are going to have to play. So I'm really glad to see the NBA like that, you know, instead of looking back at the 90s when you know it's going to be the Bulls every year going, you know, or back in the 80s when you had the Lakers and the Celtics, you know, every team's going to have to play. So I'm excited to watch it for once. Normally it's just for me college basketball, but you know, the pros have really gotten me excited this year with all the changes.
Yeah, and the league kind of has a little bit of that college basketball feel where, you know, you do see some chinks in some of the top seeds' armor. You know, none of these top seeds seem unbeatable at this point. Everybody's
right.
Got some glaring holes in their roster, or some glaring, like the Bulls, I think the biggest knock on them is the inexperience, is that they haven't gone through kind of a playoff run. You know, with the Heat, is that they don't have a point guard or big. You know, with the Celtics is the age, and then, you know, did they lose giving up Perkins? With the Lakers, can they guard point guards? Can they guard wings? You know, so there are questions with the Spurs is, you know, can they, do they still have anything left in the tank? And with the Mavericks, I have to point this out. Again, I think Dirk has gotten the rap of being soft, and you know, I think at times it's been well deserved. He's playing like a punk at times. But Dirk is the most clutch player down the stretch. Like, I was watching the first Portland game, the first game in their series, and he gets to the line, he hits big shots. He just puts a different type of pressure on the defense that you don't see a lot of guys do because of his size and his length. I'm not big on metrics. I like metrics. I like metrics because they can support different things that you may or may not see. But one thing I think they do support is that Dirk, I think he has like the highest late game shooting percentage or something ridiculous like that, amongst kind of clutch, you know, the superstar players or whatever. So, you know, but what else does Dallas have? Can they get over this mental block that they got? You know, everybody's got questions. And then you got some lower seeds that people don't really know a whole lot about coming in, like a VCU or a Butler coming in. You know, people kind of sleeping on New Orleans, sleeping on Memphis. You know, the Pacers even are playing a lot better than their record says. The Sixers gave the Heat a good game the first game, the second game not so much. But, you know, some of these more unknown teams are going to bring it, and they're going to make it tough for some of these higher seeds to advance. So I think, you know, right now it has some of that NCAA feel. I think the thing that I hate the most about the playoffs, the thing that I dislike about the NBA playoff structure is that they take so much time between games.
Yeah.
You know, they should be playing these series every other day. Every other day, you know, they should be playing. And I know they do that because of the TV and whatnot, but I think it just stretches out the series and people lose interest, people lose track of the storylines. You know? Well, I think if you can keep it at a regular pace, people know when people are playing, they know when to watch the series that they want to watch, and they don't have to check the, you know, everybody ain't like me. I'm going to check the TV guide and figure out when the games is coming on, and I'm going to set my timer for when the games come on and give me a little reminder. The average fan ain't going to do all of that. They're going to turn on the TV, flick through a couple times, see if the games is on, and if they find a game, they find a game. If they don't, they don't. If they know where to look, they know where to look. And I think the NBA makes it hard for people to actually follow the playoffs by spreading everything out so damn much.
Yeah, and I want to talk about Dirk, and they were talking about him before. I mean, one of the things that they said about it is, you know, Dirk is, for the most part, I mean, he had Nash with him, but he hasn't had all the components and pieces, but he's got a really good playoff record. You know, would they get, you kill them with the Golden State, I believe, that upset in the first round, and then the meltdown against Miami. Other than that, you know, they had to go up against San Antonio when they're at their best. You know, it's almost like, you know, running into, you know, New York running into the Bulls every time and losing. But it was, you know, so in terms of his playoff play, and I think he's probably one of the most misunderstood or misrepresented superstars we've had in a long time. He's a surefire Hall of Famer. But, you know, a 7-footer who can handle the ball, he can kick his leg, shoot off the balance. I mean, he's got all the skills. This is what he's doing that you don't see LeBron doing. LeBron doesn't do is he's established a good post game. He's got a little physical, gotten to the glass now. You see him doing what I call, you know, I talk about, it's the basketball version of running the football in the fourth quarter to move the chains. When you get down in the paint and they have no choice to either foul you, you know, or they come and you find somebody open on it. I mean, you can really control the game when you get to the block. So he is a superstar. I think that people are, you know, characterizing as being soft, but he's definitely physical, and people who play against him see that he plays. You know, just, you know, when you're a 7-footer and knocking down threes, you know, it's hard for people to get their head around that. So I did want to say that about Dirk. I mean, I think early on I was like, he's, you know, but you watch him emerge in terms of developing his game. He's developed his game, and it has much more of a fourth quarter low post scoring that you're seeing now.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, man. And I just want to throw that out there because I've noticed that also, man. That his game is a lot different than what I perceived it to be, and kind of the perception that kind of sticks in my head. You know, you just see that memory of him, and I think it was the 08 playoff where he was just constantly getting punked by Steve Jackson and Jason Richardson, and you just kind of like, oh man, this dude is soft.
And I think after he lost that series, they said he like went to like New Zealand, Australia, like got the playoff beard and like went down under, and just disappeared and went traveling. I think going through that experience, he definitely came back a different player, and you can see that now that you know he is really being physical and get to the hoop and you know getting after it, and you know now they give him a little bit more help, and he also has a defensive minded coach, and I think having Chandler, have another guy who's kind of physical in the paint, helps set the presence, helps out. The superstars always need that backup guy. You know, every once in a while, you got to have that guy who's also willing to get in there and bang with folks as well. And especially a guy like Dirk, he's going to be needing that. You know, he's going to need somebody who's going to be willing to get down there and get with him and bang with him. So, you know, they got Chandler there to help with that, block some shots, provide that presence for him so Dirk can really play in his comfort zone. So, yeah, I think, you know, Dallas is, you know, you see how Lakers are playing. I mean, I'm starting to look at Dallas, I'm saying, you know, Dallas could probably get some, can provide some problems for Lakers in a sense. And so, you know, these playoffs are going to really unfold in a real interesting way. And how these coaches make some of the adjustments with some of the downtime is going to be, is going to be important. To put in position themselves to close out some of these series.
Yeah, and I think oftentimes that's the underrated factor in the playoffs is that coaching comes in, and where the coaching is worth a win or two in a seven-game series. Because it does be, when you play in a team every night and they know what you got, they know who you got, it then boils down to, can we make the – who's going to make the best adjustments and who's going to adjust to what the other team is doing the best?
Mm-hmm.
And that's coaching.
Yeah.
I hear you there.
Good. Well, we got a lot. We didn't talk much about that Atlanta series, which I think is going to be interesting. Because even though Orlando won tonight – if you look at who actually produced for Orlando, I mean, you know, it's still a big fella. I think we're at 33 and 19. They didn't have much from anybody else. Atlanta still has some balanced scoring for the most part from their bench and their starters. They basically got the split that they needed, right? Because they played both those games in Orlando.
Yeah, both those games were in Orlando.
So they got the split. So you usually just want to get one or two. They're going to go back to their halls. You know, basically with the home court advantage is in Atlanta. You know, the disappointment is Hedo is just lost. You know, I think it goes back to what you said, Marcus, about the package. Right? It wasn't just Hedo, right?
Right.
But he's just really a non-factor for the most part. You know what I'm saying? He's not... You know, having a big fella like that in the screen and roll is what put pressure on the defense, right? And they're just not – he's just a not – I mean, I don't see him having an impact in the game. You know, I know he's probably regretting leaving for the first time, chasing fool's gold to Toronto. But he's just not giving up anything in a series in which he should be giving you something.
Yeah, man. Otis Smith has always struck me as a pretty bright GM, but I think he effed his team up. I ain't no way to put it nicely, man. I mean, this team is just ill put together right now. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I think they should beat Atlanta because I don't think very much of Atlanta. But if they lost to Atlanta, I would not be surprised. Not at all. This team is – one, they ain't got no heart. They've always been questionable with the heart. But before they had talent. Jason Richardson is probably the second best player on that team. I mean, Jameer Nelson is probably the second best player, and Jason Richardson, your third wheel. And that's just not a very good third wheel or a very good second best player. because Jameer just isn't big enough or quick enough to really create over a lot of. I mean, he may get off against Atlanta because Atlanta ain't got no. I mean, it's Kirk Heinrich and Jeff Teague. He better be able to score against them. But I mean, they just Hedo's lost the step. They aren't getting nothing from their bench. Gilbert's in the witness protection program.
Yeah, I mean, Mitchell Richardson had 8 points, man. You know.
And Gilbert don't even be looking to shoot.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Agent Zero. This brother ain't even looking to shoot no more, man.
Yeah, he is 1 for 3. He had 2 points. I mean, Redick only had 6. I mean, when you look at the stat line, you're like, how did they win it? I mean, the big fella played 48 minutes. He had 33-19. But, you know.
See, that's the thing about Atlanta. Atlanta's going to give you a couple games.
Yeah.
Atlanta's going to give you a couple.
Yeah, Hedo was.
They're
going to
take a couple, but they're going to give you a couple.
Hedo was 4 for 16. He had 5 assists. He had 4 rebounds. He had 10 points. Jameer had 13 points. Had 8 rebounds. Like he did, I mean, he had 2 assists. So, I mean, it looked like, you know, the big fella is just definitely doing his thing, which can be, you know, a tribute to him. But if you look at, you just look at the stat line, you're like, how did they win? I mean, that's what it comes down to. You're like, how did they win in this game? Crawford had 25. But it's one of, like you said, that's going to be an interesting series because, you know, depending on how these two teams play, those GMs, like you said, are going to have to make some decisions.
Yeah, one's getting the loser. This is one of those series where the loser gets blown up. That's what this is. This is a wager. We're going to play a 7-game series, loser gets blown up.
Yeah, because I don't know what to make you right. I mean, you got to do something about these two teams. Yeah, I mean, you're gonna make some decisions here. Somebody going somewhere.
Yeah, because, I mean, both of these teams have plateaued. They're not getting any – there's no – I mean, Orlando got a lot older this year. There's no getting – they're not a young team anymore. So there's no getting – you don't see them getting better necessarily. And Atlanta's kind of in the same boat. They're young. They got some holes in their roster. You don't really see them getting any better. The guys that they got are kind of the guys that they got. So, you know, the losers, they're going to have to smash it, destroy it, break it up. Do something else.
Wow. So what's your opinion on that, Nate? Is this a rock'em sock'em smash'em up series here between Atlanta? Have you had a chance to see Atlanta and Orlando?
Yeah, I mean, this series, I think, you know, it's kind of up in the air. It just seems for me Orlando never pulls through. So I really don't see them getting past this round. I think Orlando's going to beat them. That would be my pick.
Hey, we got another caller joining us on the show. This is my man Phil T's in the house.
What's up?
You there, Phil?
What's up,
Phil?
We got a full show here.
We can get a game of spades going. So, Phil, why don't you chime in? We're just getting our impressions on the playoffs and how these first couple of games are going with these early series. Anything that stood out to you?
Well, first of all, I do agree that either Orlando or Atlanta do need to be blown up. So I'm with you there.
Okay, I was waiting on a butt. I thought a butt was coming, but.
Nah, you know, this New York and Boston series has really been intriguing to me. I'm actually.
Yeah, you picked
really
the Knicks to win it.
Yeah, I picked.
I don't know if you wanted to go public with that one. That was a private text between us. I'm going to go ahead and throw that out in the streets.
Right. Yeah, you just kind of put that out there. It's lost some credibility.
You threw him under the bus, not out in the streets.
Right, it's out there in pod country now, but yeah, man, you know, I think New York is actually playing pretty well coming into the playoffs now. I made that prediction before the injuries. I didn't catch the game today. I catch the fourth quarter, and it looks like Amari got hurt as well. But I tell you what, man, if they can get both those guys back, you know, I like the way that they've been playing at home, and yeah, they played Boston pretty tough these first two games, you know, in Boston. So to me, that's pretty encouraging.
Yeah, I totally agree. And as I said earlier, man, for me, to me, Rondo has been driving me nuts. The first game, he drove me nuts, and I think that's where the real advantage for New York lies, is that they're not a great defensive team, and they can lay off Rondo and kind of just clog the lane and make it difficult for Paul Pierce to get the ball where he want to get it, and make it difficult for Ray and make it difficult for KG. And Boston ain't using their bench neither. I mean, that's one advantage that they have, is that they actually have some sort of depth where, I mean, the Knicks, I mean, Carmelo really put them on his back tonight, which props to Carmelo. He put them on his back, on their back tonight, because the bench and the rest of those guys on that Knicks team were not ready. They were not ready for the stage. They're not ready for the playoffs. And they're about six deep. And that's about it.
I don't think Doc trusts his bench yet.
No. I don't think he trusts him either. And, I mean, you can tell by the minutes, right? So he's playing. The people, and this is a great point, the people he's trusting, he's playing. So Delonte had already done a stint with him, right? Or done a stint with Boston. So Delonte played 15. And Baby Davis played 27 minutes. So that trust, you know, you get Green, he only plays 12 minutes. He goes 2 for 8, 1 for 2 from the free throw line. He gives you something. He had some foul trouble there. But Kristic's not giving you anything. You know, Murphy didn't play. Arroyo, I mean, you got all these guys.
I'm starting to think Murphy was just a let's keep him from the Heat signing.
Yeah.
They ain't done jack with Murphy.
Yeah,
I mean, they didn't even play him in a regular season to just let him get acclimated to what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that was just a move where Ainge was just like, if we can get him, we'll get him and keep him away from the Heat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they're not giving you anything. So basically what they're getting away with is playing O'Neal and Davis, you know, kind of rotating Garnett, O'Neal, and Davis, right? That's their rotation. On the big fellas. So you're right, you know, your point, Phil, about him not trusting the bench is playing out when you look at the minutes, who he's trusting on the court. And he hasn't, for some reason, Jeff Green hasn't won him over.
So was the Perkins trade a good trade or a bad trade? Let's just ask that question. I think it's a question that needs to be asked right now.
I think it's still
again, all of these
say.
Pieces are pieces that came over in the Perk trade. I think he would be playing Perkins. He may not be playing Perkins in crunch time because he can't shoot free throws and he's an offensive liability. But he would be playing Perkins more than he's playing the rest of these dudes.
Well, Perkins, they had a style that they played, and that style was real successful for them. And they may not have been as versatile as they were in past years where they could play Posey or Poe at the four. But they had a style that they could pretty much play with anybody and be competitive with anybody. Now, I think Doc leaning way too much on Jermaine O'Neal, on Glenn Davis, and with Shaq, you know. And at the same time, I think it's a little bit too early to say if the Perkins deal was a bad deal. When that deal first came out, I was shaking my head. I was confused. I was texting both of y'all. You know, I was lost. But you know, the more I heard, you know, guys talking about it and, you know, analysts breaking it down, it made a little bit more sense to me long term. But the way, you know, I thought by the end of the season, Doc would be a lot more comfortable with his rotations, guys would be fit more in roles, but that hasn't happened so far. And so I think for this season, that Perkins trade is not going to help them, you know, but in future seasons, it may.
Future season, you talk about the Boston Celtics. In future seasons, they're going to be in the basketball grade.
Right.
And Shady Oaks. The hell with the Garden, they're going to be in Shady Oaks. They're going to be playing in Shady Oaks.
Yeah. And maybe part of the problem, because I get a chance to see all the game, but I mean, part of Jeff Green's problem is you know, if they had him on Carmelo, who hit 42, that's why the foul trouble. He got foul trouble early trying to hang with Carmelo. Then that makes sense on what happened with his minutes. He's the key to this, is Jeff Green. I mean, anywhere else, I mean, Chris Dick is going to give you, it's going to be situational. So, you know, where he's going to probably come in to be a benefit is if they play the Lakers. But Green is the key to this big game, because the whole reason why you got him is because they wanted to be able to get back what they had with Posey and those guys. So I think part of his problem is getting used to the defensive rotation. I think, and I don't want to say this because what you just said, is I think the continuity is going to be better next year, but I think he can evolve through the playoff season with this group. And I think he can gain Doc's trust through the playoffs. I just think he's got a tough cover of Carmelo. If Carmelo knows he got to go for 42 with a Chauncey going down, that kind of stuff, then he could end up in foul trouble, and that could be his problem, not having the minutes on the court. But I think Green is the key to whether or not, for this season, whether or not it's going to work for them long term, because he's got to play at, he's got to give them something every night. He's got to give them 18, but he's got to give them 10 to 12. He's got to play good D. He's got to rebound. He's got to do some of those things that provide some continuity and can take away from some of those minutes that Paul got to play. So that's my thing with this, and it sounds like, you know, with Carmelo going off, that put him in foul trouble. Am I right? Yeah, it did.
With Green, though, also is that, and this goes back to me being a Georgetown fan, I've been watching Green since he was a freshman at Georgetown. Green, one of his biggest knocks at Georgetown is his unaggressiveness. Was that he was a little too laid back. To me, it seems like he's falling back. It seemed like he had cured that when he got to the league, but it seems like he's falling back into that that kind of let things happen type of role, and that you can do that when you're playing 30 minutes a night.
Yeah.
You can kind of ease into the game. I think the adjustment for Green is that he hasn't adjusted to, I need to come in off the bench, be ready to go, give him 20, 25 minutes, a good perimeter D, knock down some shots. You know, I think for – and this is a big mentality shift, because
right.
this is the first time he's ever had to come off a bench in his
that's
life.
Right. That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you got a guy who's never sat on anybody's bench. I tell my daughter that all the time. I never sat on nobody's bench.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever situation I went into, I found a way to start. And so when you have a guy who is never came off the bench and is now coming off the bench, it's a mentality shift. And it doesn't look like to me he's fully comfortable in that adjustment yet.
Yeah.
You know, defense, he can figure out the defense. He can figure out the offensive scheme. I think he has to figure out how do I jump right into a game setting right away, get going, give what I need to give, and then come back out and be able to come back in and do it again. And for a guy with a laid-back personality, I think that's hard for him.
Which is different with Delonte, who, again, got that crazy element. He don't really care.
Yeah, Delonte looked
like, you know, I'm calling Miss James. You know, I don't really
care. Yeah, man.
You know, Delonte, he used to that. So he was,
and Delonte looked like a meth addict. I'm just going to say
it. Some tats. Doc was like, I only have two or three of them on the team.
He got neck tats.
Doc was like, I need two or three of them team just for the warm up, just for the warm block. That people remind him we got a little crazy.
Oh man,
we will fight you.
Yeah man. Yeah, Delonte looked like he got a lot of germs.
What?
He looked like he got a lot of germs, man. He looked like a dirty dude. Like he needs a bathe in Purell.
Wow.
What I would say, he looked like he sometimes remind me of. Every time I look at him, I'm thinking Clarice. Like he took a bite out your neck.
I'm telling you, he look crazy, don't he?
You don't want to walk past him because you're like, dude, he's going to jump on me. And next thing you know, he got blood on his mouth because he'll bit somebody in the neck. What's going on?
Wow, that's like a baby. I don't get like that. A baby vampire.
That's why you got him in the layup line. You get him in the layup line because you're looking at him like, I'm not going to put Galante in tonight, man. But he look crazy right now.
Yeah, wow.
Like, if you brush up against him, you might get a rash.
Phil, you
know, Phil's on
my arm. Nate, quiet. Nate's like, what have I done?
Hey, you on Renegade Radio, Nate. Man, this is how we get down.
Hey, that's what I like about it. No, I appreciate you, gentlemen. You know, everything that you've done and everything. I'm going to have to get going, but I'm definitely going to be calling.
Have a good night, bro.
All right.
You're always welcome back.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep.
Take care.
So, Phil T.
Yes, sir.
Wait. Give us your take on the Western Conference.
You know, when I called you guys a week or two before the season started, I made two bold predictions. I made a prediction that the Hornets would make the playoffs and the Clippers would make the playoffs. Well, the Clippers didn't make it. Y'all pretty much told me that, but I was stubborn. But
they looked good at times.
Yeah, at times. But, you know, with Chris Paul playing, man, you know, I love watching Chris Paul play. He just plays the game the right way, as Larry Brown used to say, or it's probably still saying. You know, he just makes his team better, you know, in the way that LeBron does in my mind. And so watching him against the Lakers, he just broke them down completely. And I actually like that matchup for the Hornets. I don't think they're going to win it, but I think they could probably stretch that out to 6 or 7 games, which will really handicap the Lakers for the next round. But, you know, if that team had David West, and it looks like the big guy that had a decent game for them last on Sunday, he twists his ankle, so he's questionable for the next game. But I'm interested to see how the Hornets will play in the next game.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the test. And I said it earlier on the show. I totally agree with you about losing Aaron Gray. You know, that's a big body. They don't have a lot of big bodies. Against the Lakers, you need big bodies. But, man, it was like I told Devon, I was like, man, I turned on the game, and I was like, oh, yeah, Chris Paul is cold. I totally forgot.
Yeah.
I totally forgot. That's a bad man.
And, you know, and the thing about it, this is the stuff that I, you know, that you got to pay attention to, and I want to make people, you know, if the Lakers are going to do well, people are going to forget the part that Gray got hurt and what difference that could have made in the series, you know, and exposing some things about the Lakers. And, you know, sometimes it just goes like that. You know, like I said, it's like the Lakers are really the Celtics because they got some kind of lucky charm over their head. And, like, they're on ropes and somehow – somebody bails them out. It's kind of like WWF wrestling and somebody, or WWE now, and somebody comes in. Just when you're about to get pinned, they come in and knock you off the top of the guy. And that's where you see with the Lakers, that great, they were going to work on them. I mean, they were going to work on them, and they looked soft. And, you know, one of the things we talked about in the show I was on with Skimmy and Mo and them is, are you going to see our test on Paul? You know, are you going to see somebody come with a, you know, Phil Jackson saying, I got too many options. Let me put crazy on him and let him get physical.
Well, they tried that.
We're going
round
around
no
meds. We're going round around no meds on Paul.
That leading man and let me put Queensbridge on him.
I don't think our test
has you, man. Run around like one of them kids coming to a public school, and you're like, man, did he have his meds today? All the teachers is like, this also get his meds. Because he's flipping out today. That's what they're going to do with Ron Ron. No meds. Put him on Paul. We're going to see how this goes.
My thoughts. So your West Coast analysis, talk to us about San Antonio.
I think San Antonio will be fine. I was surprised that Memphis snuck out a game, but I think San Antonio will be fine when they get Ginobili back. Any word if he'll be back for game two yet?
But from what I've heard, he should be. I haven't heard anything official, but from what I've heard, he should be.
I don't think the Spurs will get past the second round. You know, I still like the Lakers out west, but I do think the Spurs will get past Memphis. The other series, Oklahoma City and Denver.
Denver.
I'm actually taking Denver in that one.
I made that prediction earlier. I made that same thing. Great minds think alike. I said it earlier, man. I'm going with Denver.
I think George Karl has done a decent job out there since the trade, and somehow he's made them group of hoodlums. He's made them buy in them playing 15, 20, 25 minutes a game. And when those guys are on the court, they are busting it out. I mean, he's going 10 deep. And, I mean, they can just beat you in a couple different ways. I mean, they're kind of unpredictable. But I think they can get past Oklahoma City. Now, like you guys brought up the issue with Jeff Green. I think Oklahoma City, everybody thought they need a big guy, and they do, but they still need that Jeff Green guy out there. You know, with Westbrook and Durant, they hold the ball a lot. And I think one of the issues Green is having out in Boston is, for an NBA team, Boston actually moves the ball around quite a bit. And they, you know, that's tough for new guys to come into the system. And Green's used to kind of, you know, like you say, playing 30 minutes, hitting open shots, asserting himself in different points. And when I watch Oklahoma City, it's the first time I got a chance to watch them since the trade. And they were kind of missing that piece to me. You know, Kirk can certainly bring something extra to them, but, you know, I thought before the trade they could get to the second round, but I don't think they can do it right now.
And would you say that's disappointing if they can't get to the second round?
Yeah, I think it'd be real disappointing if they can't make it to the second round.
I think it'd be a disappointment also. I think what it would do is it would put them on the clock. They would start. I think and hopefully Sam Presti, the general manager, who seemed to be real patient and real savvy in his role, doesn't panic if they get bounced, which I think they will. But I think you're right on. They need that third scorer on the perimeter. They got Westbrook, they got Durant, but again, they probably had 70, 80 points between the two of them last game, and they barely won at home, you know, in that environment. And they barely beat Denver.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're going to be able to get those type of performances all the time, especially as the series goes on. Yeah, they're young, but Denver's young too, and they can throw two guys at you at every position. They got two guys. They're too deep at every position, and I mean two quality guys, two guys who would start on a lot of teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I think it's going to be a battle of attrition, and I don't think Oklahoma City is going to be able to survive it, because they just don't have enough. So we didn't hit our 90-second marker. A little English lady doing what she do, hollering at us, let us know it's time to get off air. Pardon shots, shout outs. I'll let Phil T go first.
Keep it short and sweet. Let's go, Knicks.
You said that like you have money on it.
I want to see the Knickerbockers win.
He called them the Knickerbockers. What you got, D?
I want to say we got some of the best. You see why we got some of the best listeners in the game. I just want to thank Nate and Phil for coming on with us. This is what makes Renegade Radio work, and I just want to keep on coming to the table. Rusty Renegade listeners, please come in, and let's just demonstrate why the movement is working.
Yeah, the movement is growing. We had Larry on the chat. Me and Larry was going back and forth on the chat. Phil T and Nate checking in. Appreciate it. Hey, if you guys didn't get a chance to see it, if there's a replay this Saturday, man, y'all need to check out that Victor Diaz and Andre Berto fight. Man, that if you didn't see that, check that out. Check that out. That was a great fight. But anyways, man, Game Changer, D-Wills, Phil T, signing off. Ray somewhere out there kicking it. You know, we're going to sign off. We're going off. Real Sports Guys, Renegade Radio. Peace. All right, we off here.
All right. It was good stuff. Phil T.
What's happening, brother?
Strong. That felt good.
That was a good show, man.
The Knicks, after our radio right now, the Knicks. Ooh, you not scared of the non-defense? You must have been in the locker room listening to the defensive scheme they had in place.
Man, the defensive scheme they playing is leave Rondo open.
Yeah. He burned him tonight, though. He burned him.
He did, but again, all of his shots was in the paint. You know, the majority of his buckets was in the paint, and he still can't shoot free throws, man. From Biddy Ball, man, you talk point guard got to be able to hit free throws, man. Point guard can't shoot free throws bothers me.
Yeah,
it just offends my sensibilities, man.
Yeah.
It's offensive.
Hey, man, I was going to tell you, Marcus, whenever you talk, you actually getting some feedback. I don't know if anybody told you that. I noticed that. I think either last week or the week before I was listening to the podcast, and it's like when you talk, you get like an echo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I can almost hear it right now, almost like, you ever call the radio and you got the radio on?
Yeah. I don't have it on, though. Yeah, I don't listen to talking at the same time. I have to figure that out.
I get that sometimes with my Bluetooth, too. I don't know if you want a Bluetooth, but... anyway, just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Now, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, because we want to make sure it all works out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can know that. Are you using a Bluetooth?
Who, me?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I'm just on my cell phone.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, that could be it.
So you ain't got that Metro, do you?
I don't mess with that.
I get on my brother about that all the time. Keep dropping. I'm like, you on that Metro?
Get out the window. I put my head out the window here in Rockford.
I got a better chance to hear you. This is roll some string from Ann Arbor to Rockford.
Right.
I always get on him about that.
Yeah, man. But yeah, I mean, New York got a shot, man. New York got a shot if they can get these games in New York. You know, and if they get the guy, if they have full strength with Chauncey and Amari back, you know. I think they got a shot because they're not a very deep team, and without those two, they don't stand a chance. Because, like I said, it was a Jerry Jeffrey sight tonight.
Bill Walker went 0 for 11.
Yeah, exactly. Bill Walker 0 for 6. He just realized it's gonna be a rough night.
Right.
He put up 5 more.
You know, at some point, like Huey Brown says, you're open for a reason. That's by design. Stop shooting.
When you said that, Phil, I fell out. I said, you said for it to Huey Brown on it. I said, man. I said, he right on board on that.
Tell you that.
I said, he right on board on that one. You're open for a reason.
That's how I feel about Rondo, man. Like, they 30 feet away from you for a reason, man.
they treat you like you're a fourth grade point guard.
For real.
Play off him. That's what I say. Play off him.
Stand in the lane. Protect the paint. All he can shoot is layups. You know, you got that parent yelling from the sideline. He only going right. He can't go left. He ain't got no left hand. He in third grade.
But but that's what makes you even amazed that he can get away with that.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I'm watching him play. I'm like, how are you even effective right now? Like, how are you even having a positive impact right now? Well, they don't even have to actually guard you, man.
So what were they doing? Because I only saw the last minute of the game. What were they doing to him?
I mean, they're basically doing what the Lakers did last year. Just playing off of him, trying to keep him out of paint. You know, keep him in front of you, but give him enough space. And then when he comes around screens, don't sweat it. Let him run off a screen. As long as he don't curl into the paint, they just slide across. If you want to pop out for a 20-footer, let him. And he can't make them. He open for them. They open. He can't make them, though.
Right.
And it's not even like Tony Parker can't make a jump shot.
Even Tony's worked on his range a little bit. Extended.
Yeah, I mean, Tony still ain't a great shooter, but Tony's effective. You know, you got to respect Tony's J.
If Rondo could shoot like Tony, even shoot like Tony Parker, he'd be devastating.
I mean, like right now, Rondo looked like Chris Dudley. Yeah.
If you're not gonna be able to shoot a jump shot, you do need to figure out how to make free throws.
Yeah, that's the thing that kills me. Like if he wasn't, I can live with him not being a great shooter if he could shoot 75% from the line,
yeah.
Even 70% from the line.
You like the black Doug Gottlieb, you know?
Right.
Doug was going up there not shooting him down, jumping at all. But led an assist, but you know, you got to be able to shoot some free throws or something. Give me something.
Yeah, but I mean, with Rondo, they basically the one thing that it does do for him, the fact that people play him like that, is it gives him passing angles. Like, he never has a hand in his face when he's trying to set up the offense and distribute the ball. So he gets, that's why he gets so many assists, is because he can make whatever pass he wants to make, because ain't no defense on him, ain't nobody in his face, you know. And so that allows him to do that. But, you know, just think about how more effective he would be if they had to actually play him. I mean, play him straight up. And that's why the Lakers got away with, I mean, he should have ate Fisher up last year in the finals. You know, he should have ate Fisher up, but they were able to put Kobe on him. Kobe's not quick enough to stay with him, but Kobe's got good enough length where he can play off of him and still challenge a shot.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, you know, but somehow I got a feeling that Boston's going to end up in the finals anyway.
You think so?
Yeah, New York is a bad matchup for them, but I think they're going to gain confidence. I just think, don't get fooled by the series. It's going to be a tough battle for them just because nobody's going to bring the kind of scoring New York can bring. You know what I'm saying? When you got Chauncey and you have four goals, you got three legitimate. I mean, scoring even in a different way than Miami scoring. You know, you understand what I'm saying? I mean, Stoudemire, as a center, is probably one of the best scoring centers, if not the best scoring center, right?
Yeah.
You know, Carmelo is one of the best scorers in the league straight out.
Yeah.
But definitely his position, best scorer. And then Chauncey, when it comes to this big game, scoring can give you headaches. He's physical. He can take you in the post.
And see, I was going to say, the other piece with Chauncey is that you got to guard Chauncey from the minute he steps across half court.
Yeah.
You know, he's a scorer from 30 feet, you know, in, where he can get you, he can catch you on the block, get a bucket, you know. He's got a nice mid-range shot. He can shoot the three. He can shoot that pull-up on the break.
Yeah. So when you're looking at all that, when they start going into these other series, there's going to be some drop-off there. Because even when they go up against Miami, Bosch isn't Stoudemire. He don't scare you like that. He don't bring that dog like Stoudemire do. Stoudemire might not play no defense, but offensively he comes at you like, rawr. You know what I'm saying? And so then you can concentrate on some of the other cats. But also, LeBron isn't using his total part of his game, if you really think about it. You know, if LeBron had a better post game, then he's going to cause you a lot of problems. So I think they're really comfortable playing against Miami in a way that they're going to be okay with it. You said the Bulls present something, but for some of the same reasons we talked about their problem with the Bulls right now because they learned how to win. You know, if Indiana's got able to do that, what do you think Boston, who really knows how to play defense, going to do to Chicago? It's going to be a drag out, but you know they got a blueprint by watching Indiana.
But see, Rondo worries me because Rondo is a liability. I feel like Rondo's becoming a liability for them because but Ray and Pierce and Garnett were still able to mask that because they were still playing at a really high level. I don't think those three are where they were last year as far as how well they were playing last year at this time. And maybe they'll start to step it up, but I feel like he has to do more this year, and he's not. I feel like he has to start to do more for this team, and he ain't. And eventually, they're going to have bad matchups at those other spots. You know, in a Miami series, they're not going to have the clear advantage at those spots, on offense or the defensive end. But they will at Rondo's spot. But if they ain't got to play Rondo straight up, and he's got to manufacture the majority of their points, and again, the Knicks, to me, they play fast. They play a fast-paced game. They get up and down. He's going to be able to get layups against the Knicks because they're not a quality defensive team. What happens when it's a half-court game? He's got to manufacture baskets. Rondo seems like he's just a liability to me right now. You know, he had a good game tonight, but again, that's because he got a lot of layups in transition. He was able to get into the paint against the Knicks, who don't have a shot blocker, who don't have anybody underneath. Is he going to be able to do that against the Bulls and the Heat? I don't know. That's my thing with Rondo, man. And then I feel like Jermaine O'Neal ain't gave him nothing, man. He ain't gave him nothing, man. I feel like they ain't got nothing from him, man. They might as well be playing Kristich.
Man, Amari is a beast on the block. I almost forgot how big of a beast he was, man. The last couple of possessions of that game one, I mean, he was with Garnett. I mean, Garnett didn't have nothing for him. And, you know, Garnett's a very good defensive player, man. I mean, Amari was just going right by him, facing him up. I mean, whew. I was sitting there getting nervous. Like I was watching Moses Malone or somebody, man.
Amari's a monster, man. I mean, offensively, There isn't another big other than maybe Gasol, who's as skilled as Amari is. I mean, I'd say it's him and Powell. After that, I mean, Dirk doing what he do right now, taking it to Portland.
I think oh, he's in the paint right now, banging, being physical.
Right. He could quit making that German face, though. It's been not a tough face.
man.
That's what makes people think he's soft.
Hey, what was up with y'all in Delonte West, man? Y'all was all over that man. What?
Man, you ever really look at Delonte, man?
I guess not. You know,
he looked like the cycle version of the leprechaun?
A leprechaun.
Cycle.
See, that's part of it too, man. He meets the Celtics redhead quarter, man. They got rid of Scalabrini, so they had to bring Delonte, and they need a redhead on the team all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Scalabrini left and went to the Bulls.
So yeah, we can't help it, man.
Yeah, man. Every time I look at Delonte, I laugh. Oh man, I know you probably got an affinity for Delonte from his calf days.
Yeah, I always liked his game, man.
He got game. He just looked dirty.
Right.
I ain't say he couldn't play.
Yeah, Thomas, man, he was the second best player on the Cavs last couple of years, man. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree. That says a lot, though.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Hey, son, I'm going to let y'all go, though, man. I gotta get going. I got to get to bed.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen.
All right, man. It's good hearing from you.
Yep.
All right. Take care, y'all.
All right. Peace.